Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for MacBreak Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is MacBreak Weekly, episode 171 for December 15th, 2009. Man of the Year. MacBreak Weekly is brought to you by Audible.com, a leading provider of audiobooks with more than 60,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For your free book, visit audible.com/MacBreak. And by GoToMeeting. Do more and travel less with GoToMeeting. Make your next meeting a GoToMeeting instead. For your free 30-day trial, visit GoToMeeting.com/MacBreak. And by the new voice-activated Sync, featuring hands-free calling, music search, and turn-by-turn navigation. Available exclusively on Ford, Lincoln, and Mercury vehicles. For more details, visit SyncMyRidePodcast.com. It's time for MacBreak Weekly, the show that covers all the stuff going on in the Macintosh and Apple world, including iPods and iPhones and MacBooks and MacBook Pros and Mac Pros and Zunes. No, not Zunes. I'm sorry. I lost my head there. Here he is, ladies and gentlemen, from visiting his family in Pittsburgh, normally in studio with us, Alex Lindsay.
Hello.
Hey, are you going to be there through Christmas?
No, I'm just here until Thursday, and then I'm in D.C. for a day and a day or two, and then I'm back.
Spam travels this weekend. All the time. Well, it's good. I'm glad you could get on.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here. Am I coming through okay?
You're coming through clear.
Excellent. Loud. Excellent. I'm in the middle of nowhere.
Are you? What are you on?
I'm on a. It's a DSL, but it's
It looks good.
But if it looks okay, yeah, it's not a particularly fast connection, but it seems to be fast enough.
As long as it's stable, that's more important than fast.
I'm the only one using it, and I really am in the middle of nowhere. I can't see another house from this house.
Awesome.
So I don't think anyone else is using it. It's just me.
This is where Alex blew up things in his youth.
Oh.
And all the neighbors moved away.
Also, well, you know, we're hoping to avoid the FBI investigation.
I tried to avoid doing this with my son, but he's gone down that path. So I'm trying to.
I saw your tweet. We're going to talk about that in just a second. But that was very interesting. What you're up to, Alex Lindsay is here, as well as Andy Inotko from the Chicago Sun Times and the Celestial Waste of Bandwidth, and from beautiful snowy Massachusetts. Is it snowy?
No, we're getting a 2-day break from the cold weather, just long enough to resupply and bury the dead.
Most of the dead out in the driveway with a snow shovel.
Every day's a blessing, Leo. Every day's a blessing.
And no one knows that better than Mr. Scott Bourne. Hello, Scotty.
Hello.
Hello, good to see you. Thank you very much for joining us today.
It's wonderful to be here in Gig Harbor.
Yeah.
No snow in Gig Harbor.
No, it snowed all around us, but we were spared.
Good.
Which is good, because all the 84-year-old women get their rear-wheel drive Cadillacs out and decide to test them on the one day a year it snows here.
Let's see how this puppy goes in the snow.
Yeah, and that's the only day a year they drive, by the way.
Also with us, a newbie, and we're really glad to have him, Peter Krogh, who I first met on a geek cruise. Peter is the author of a classic work of nonfiction called The Dam Book. The DM, Digital Asset Management. Peter, good to talk to you.
Great to be here, Leo. Really, really pleased to see you again here over the wire. I'm coming to you from my basement studio here in downtown Kensington, Maryland. We're just outside Washington, D.C. If you hear some knocking around in the background, that's my nephew who's outside helping to paint the studio on his Christmas break from college.
Isn't that nice? Well, it's great to have you, Peter. Peter and I met in, actually, it wasn't a geek cruise. It was in Tasmania. Yeah. It was Tasmania. Yeah, the Lightroom Adventure 2. Boy, what fun that was.
Yeah, just an amazing group of people and heck of a good time, a lot of work. Yeah. Anytime Mikkel Olland calls you up and says, hey, you want to do this? My strong suggestion is to always say yes.
I'm lobbying him to do Cuba before it changes dramatically.
Yeah. You know?
Would love to do a photo safari in Cuba. Anyway, we're going to talk about the Mac news. First, though, Alex, I saw that your tweet that you you went into a store to buy a Casio keyboard.
We walked. So my son and I, we were reading a little too much of Make magazine and decided we'd have a little bit of fun. And so we walk into this Radio Shack and we bought this Casio keyboard. And, you know, the thing about the Casio is it's got all these chips that are inside of it that do all these great sounds. And but you can't get to them from the keys. So so what we did is we bought it. But the funny thing was we went up to the guy and he asked us, would you like to get an extended warranty? And I was like, yeah, we're gonna rewire the motherboard, and he just looked down. He looked down. He's like, "Never mind."
I guess you won't be getting that warranty there, huh?
In the old days, that's what you did at Radio Shack: that you'd buy stuff and then you'd build stuff. And I thought that he'd understand it because there was a keyboard there, there was a soldering. It wasn't a soldering. There was a bunch of, you know, equipment.
Let's face it; it looked like you were bomb making with all the stuff that you had in there. I'm sure.
Yeah, yeah, but it was actually not the most frightening thing we did that night, which was my son took apart a disposable camera, and it turns out that when you just push the little connectors to charge it up, and you can do a lot of damage to a set of pliers by just connecting the circuit. It's quite amazing at how much voltage those little guys keep in them.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Yeah, I bet.
And I was frightened that it was my son that was the one that came up with it, not me. I was just kind of watching and trying to make sure he didn't kill himself. So
Peter's up to something kind of intriguing. In fact, one of the reasons we're having you on, although I've been dying to get you on Mac Break for a long time, you're working with the Library of Congress on something.
Yeah, we've been working on a project that's a three-year project to identify best practices in digital photography workflow. The interest of the library is to make sure that the digital record does not disappear. They're worried that born digital photos might just go away. So one of the things that they're doing to address this is to find people who are experts in the field, and they've given us some money to go research how you should work with your digital images and then put this information out free to the entire world. So we've built this giant website that describes essentially how all digital imaging technology works and also tells the photographer, particularly the working photographer, how to put it together in a sustainable workflow.
This ties into your DAM work, the digital asset management work.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's not a path I chose. It's a path that chose me.
But now it's yours. Yours for life, I'm afraid.
Yeah, I come at it as a photographer first, but God, you know, I wish someone else would do it, but apparently it keeps falling to me to have to figure out, you know, this crap out. I have a great partner that I'm working with, a guy named Richard Anderson, and it's been a real joy to work with somebody who will noodle around this stuff down to the very, very basement, you know.
It's something we all have to think about, really, not just the Library of Congress, but we've all got a ton of digital. Our whole life is recorded digitally now.
Yeah, I mean, you think about how just a simple hard drive failure could wipe out, you know, your entire personal history.
Right.
And we really don't want to have that happen. So, and the only way to protect is for us to teach people best practices and how to take care of it.
This stuff's particularly important to Alex because he's so digital, isn't he? He's got digital boogers.
Thank you for that nice image. He's got, that's awesome.
I try to contribute wherever I can.
that's just a beautiful.
Yeah, it was getting a little too heavy there.
It's a beautiful thing there.
Bring it back to really, third grade.
Well, yeah. Something. Yeah. Let's talk.
I think that it.
Go ahead.
All I was going to say is that I think that these kind of things, we've moved from saying that something doesn't exist unless it exists in two places to three places after
really?
We had a near scary experience with some of our files. And the thing is that, you know, I know that within our company, we're trying to go to being completely paperless over the next year, mostly out of efficiency. It's not really an environmental thing. We just don't want to deal with paper anymore. And so, but that makes all of these things, best practice of how we handle digital information, extremely important because, you know, just a flick of a wrist can, you know, get rid of, you know, years of stuff.
So we have a simple way we like to say it is that you should have 3-2-1 backups, three copies of anything you want to keep, two different media, and one of them should be stored off site.
Oh, I like that. And it's 3-2-1.
It's achievable.
That's great.
3-2-1 backups. Yeah.
That's very straightforward. Easy to remember. So have you seen the fake Steve Jobs campaign? I'm not sure I want to endorse this. He's trying to bring AT&T to its knees. In the secret, if fakesteve.net, if you go there, he's calling it Project Chokehold. I'm sorry, Operation Buzzkill. Same thing. the goal is Operation Chokehold is right. Project Buzzkill is the guy who wrote in and said, "Hey, just consider this the impact this is going to have on people who use AT&T cell phones, kind of as a lifeline to the outside world." So Operation Chokehold, the goal is for everyone, and I'm not, again, advocating this. In fact, I'd like you guys...
Do we really want to give this airtime?
I almost don't want to give it airtime. I almost don't, but I thought about doing it on Twitter, and I decided not to. But here, amongst a more seasoned, intelligent crowd, I think we can mention it and ask then why it's such a bad idea. And Scott, you will get the first dibs on this. Although it's very... And I know, Alex, you want to do it because it's very tempting. Here's what fake Steve Jobs says at fakesteve.net. By the way, it's Dan Lyons. Everybody knows that. On Friday, December 18th at noon Pacific, we will attempt to... sounds like a manifesto from the Kremlin. We will attempt to overwhelm the AT&T data network and bring it to its knees. The goal is to have every iPhone user, as many as we can, turn on a data-intensive application and run that app for one solid hour. Apps include maybe Ustream, that kind of thing, watching us. Send the message to AT&T. We're sick of their substandard network, sick of their abusive comments. The idea is to create a digital flash mob. We're calling it Operation Chokehold. Join us and speak truth to power. But then somebody wrote in, and actually, to Dan's credit, he did publish the email, and I think it's kind of, well, he published it making fun of it, but I think it's a good point. This guy says, look, my wife's quadriplegic. Our AT&T cell phone is our only phone. If you bring it down for an hour, if you bring the network down, it'll bring down the phone network as well. And it may choke more than just AT&T. And I think that's a legitimate point. Scott, what's your thought on this?
I don't even know where to start with this moron. Dan, the fake brain might be better. I mean, if you don't like the service, here's a real simple solution. Get rid of your phone. Don't use AT&T. But when you talk about trying to bring the network to its knees by hampering the service the rest of us are paying for, I think you're an idiot. I mean, there's, this faux outrage that the internet allows people to express over, we got Darfur. We got people dying of H1N1. We've got, an AIDS crisis. We've got all these problems in the world. And this is what this guy wants to build a movement around? Come on. Just, you don't like AT&T service? Get rid of the damn phone and get something else.
Alex, you were rubbing your hands with glee. You want to do this?
I think it's a great test of the system.
Think of it that way.
It's a little bit of a fire sale, but it would be very interesting. I don't think that they're going to be able to take it down. I don't think enough people are going to do it. I don't think it's going to be that big of a deal. If I was AT&T, I'd be paying a lot of attention to cell networks and figuring out, what that has. I mean, they obviously have a problem. And I think that the best way for AT&T to solve their problem is to allow Apple to make the phones available to a lot of other. Spread the pain to other cell networks that would love to have an iPhone. If they can't handle the iPhone traffic, what they should do is allow Verizon and T-Mobile and everyone else to have access to that traffic and let them feel the pain that iPhones are creating. I think iPhones are absolutely creating. I don't know if a single network can simply support what's happening. It looks like Apple's going to sell 10 million units this quarter, and they may do that every quarter, and now, that's going to be...
Here's an interesting... I'll throw an interesting article into the mix. Randall Strauss, San Jose State business professor, writing in Sunday's New York Times, says AT&T takes the blame, but really, it's the iPhone's fault. He interviewed a number of people, including Roger Entner, who's a senior vice president for telecommunications research at Nielsen. Entner says the iPhone's air interface, the electronics in the phone that connected to the cell towers, have shortcomings that affect both voice and data. He says AT&T doesn't publicly defend itself because it will not criticize Apple under any circumstances, but he believes it's really the iPhone's fault.
Well, certainly the iPhone's fault in terms of demand, and I think Alex's idea is actually a good one. And I, if everybody remembers back to when I was involved in my iPhone mania stage, I was the first one to say, "Oh no, AT&T! I'm no AT&T fan." But I, you know, I just don't see how this plan can help. I mean, do you think this will make AT&T more responsive? The fact that they got attacked, I mean, it would make me.
You're essentially handing them their own sword and shield. You're saying, well, of course the network went down. We were victims of a malicious attack. But don't worry, AT&T takes security very, very seriously, and they were unable to bring the network down completely. That's why we're number one in customer service, according to this Polby Commission, and you can trust us forevermore.
Well, there's an independent company, Root Wireless, which is in the Seattle area, that offers software that people can put on their phone to test it. They ran 4.7 million tests on smartphones for each of the four major carriers in seven metropolitan areas: Chicago, Dallas, LA, New York, San Francisco, and Washington. They said in every market we tested, AT&T had faster average download speeds and signal strength of 75% or better more frequently than did Verizon.
Yeah, the fundamental problem here really is the way people want to access data. It's just, they just want to have it. You know, I'm a recent convert to the iPhone, and I got my first one when my Verizon contract went out this summer. And the day I got it, my relationship to my computer and the internet and all of that changed. And I started consuming a hell of a lot more of this data. And that's just the way it is.
We Apple users, iPhone users love to use them, and I think that's true for software too. You know, people say I'm not going to develop for the Mac market because it's too small of a market, but yet Mac, I think Mac developers do very well because Mac users buy software, they buy more software, they use it more thoroughly, they pay for shareware.
What do you think about this leading to these stories we're hearing that AT&T is going to move to a tiered pricing based on actual usage? Have you heard those stories?
I haven't, but I think that's not a bad idea. It depends, on what the pricing is. I would like to have true unlimited service, although I don't know if I've ever gone over 5 gigs.
Well, they're saying that I think the number I read was 3-7% of the users are using 40% of the bandwidth. And they want to move
3%.
3%, yeah. story's out there.
I don't think that's a bad. I think it's probably they floated as a trial balloon to see what people like us and say about it. But I don't think tiering is a bad idea. I don't like caps. But if you want to say, if you tell me, look, if you want faster bandwidth or you want more bandwidth, you pay more. I don't have a problem with that as long as the pricing is fair.
Yeah, right now it's 30 a month. You're going to eat all you can.
Yeah, they're talking about going to 40 a month with 10, 20, 30, 40, download range. So I think they're floating a couple of different ideas. But I guarantee you, if they said to me, would you pay 60 a month to get, you know, twice as much speed or whatever, I'd be glad to pay it. I think there are plenty of power users that would pay more to take some of the pressure off the network. And I do think this is a legitimate line of inquiry and concern. I mean, I think they could do something here that would either be very helpful or very hurtful to the rest of us, and I'm going to watch it closely.
Now, Peter, when we were in Australia, remember how expensive it is, and Johnny Worthington, who's one of our listeners who listens in Australia, is telling us that if you're on Telstra and you have a business account with Telstra, which is even, you know, the better account, 150 megabytes of data on your phone, $10. Twice that, 300 megabytes, $29. More than twice the cost, three times the cost.
Yeah, it's bandwidth is expensive in a lot of parts of the world. And, you know, in Africa, it's tremendously expensive. And while I think that those approaches are a great formula for stifling development in your country, there is some sense to, you know, charging people for what they actually do use.
John Gruber, by the way, responds to the Randall Strauss article and is in a very aggressive manner, perhaps justified, perhaps not. Claim one is that the source, his primary source is president of Global Wireless Solutions, a network testing firm that has AT&T as one of his clients, Verizon not one of his clients. Root Wireless, the company I mentioned in Bellevue that does the software testing, says, and Strauss says in the article that the software that they ran didn't run on iPhones because you can't do background processes, so they didn't test the network on iPhones. But that would, in a way, lend credence to Strauss's claim, which is that the iPhone is the problem, not the network.
Yeah.
He does say, well, what about
it's
consumer?
It's the damn user that's the problem.
I frankly think
user
it is.
Wants the bandwidth, you know?
Yeah. And he also raises the point which our chat room raises, which is if it is the iPhone, poorly designed iPhone, then why isn't it having problems all over the world? Although I have heard lots of complaints in England about the iPhone.
I'm always a fan of guessing it's a user error problem.
Because it's almost always a safe
bet. Well, we have a saying in the photography business, 99% of all lenses are better than 98% of all photographers.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, and I think that the only concern that I have is as someone who bought an iPhone expecting to have unlimited service is that there's a couple things. This is that I would expect to at least be able to go through my contract, at least until the end of the contract, without having this be enabled. You know, this is what I bought into, and I know that I'd be pretty tweaked if they changed it in the middle of the contract. If they sign a new contract and say, this is the new rule.
They can't do it like that, Alec. They will not be able to change that. You'll have an option of either getting out of it or they won't have it apply to you until then. More than likely, they would test this on new buyers to start with.
Right. And then the second thing is that this gets into an argument against monopolies and so on and so forth, that if AT&T is going to start charging, this is where I would want to see it either by their choice or by force, that they have to make the iPhone available to other networks. You know, because then we get to choose. Because if AT&T is the only one with the iPhone, and they're able to just, you know, set whatever rates they're going to set, you know, from a iPhone user's perspective, you know, I would find that to be concerning. You know, they'll charge whatever they're going to charge. I want to at least see them have to compete with Verizon and T-Mobile and everyone else for our service. Because, you know, I think that I do think that iPhone users generally are more valuable in a lot of ways. I get that we put a lot of pressure on it, but we also pay pretty hefty rates for you know, for our service in general. We're not buying the bottom level service that AT&T is getting.
So the other question in all of this is what happens with Google and Android and other smartphones, and does that put pressure on AT&T? Right now, part of the reason they have this, you know, need to maybe not be as responsive is because it's seen that there really isn't an option.
There's no choice.
Yeah.
Well, I think they said there's going to be 50 Android phones coming out next year. So I think that there is going to be a lot of competition.
Including a Google phone, if you believe some of the rumors. Google employees got a something called a Nexus last week, and everybody seemed to have one. A lot of people have seen them now. They're beautiful. They kind of look like, they look like an Android phone, but big screen, and HTC designed it for Google. And there's some rumors, I don't credit them, by the way, that Google is going to start selling these unlocked in January. That you, now there'll be GSM, which means AT&T or T-Mobile will be your two choices.
Yeah, but there are a couple things that are missing from all these rumors. Number one, what does this do that any other Android phone would not do?
Well, it's a new version of Android that's available only on that phone.
That's what I was about to say. Yeah. It supposedly it has Android 2.1, but I've never heard a rumor about people who've held and used these things that says, if I've already bought a Droid and I update to version 2.1 of the OS, what will I have on this new phone that I would not have in any existing phone? It would be a big deal if many manufacturer decided to make a competitively priced unlocked phone. Right now, a lot of people don't realize that it is very, very easy to buy an unlocked phone, but usually that's when you start to find out exactly how much these devices actually cost when they're not being subsidized by a two-year contract. Right. Typically, you can expect to spend about $150 to $200 premium over the cost of a subsidized phone. So I'm not sure. It's just rumor at this point, but I'd be very curious to see if they could sell this phone for less than $400 or $500, and if given that most people don't tend to hopscotch between carriers all that often, if people are going to think that they're getting value for $200, if you live out the life of your contract on that phone and 2 years later you're still in the same carrier, you kind of spent $200 on nothing, unless you were able to find exactly the carrier that you wanted.
Right. Yeah, I'm not sure I credit it. I think in all likelihood it's just Google with another phone that they're trying out. And as you say, everybody's going to be doing Android phones. That's a real challenge, really, for Apple, is
It's not one phone. Right, exactly. Yeah. It's the Red Ant algorithm, where no one of them is big enough to take down the elephant, but you put 10,000 of them in the field, and boy, that guy's going to lose a foot or two.
Well, here's the only question that I have, though, as someone who develops software, is that what I get concerned about when I hear that there's going to be 50 different phones is that there's 50 different implementations of something that I have to develop for, and that is not something that gets me excited. I mean, we're working on iPhone apps, we're working on stuff like that right now. I would not want to try to figure out how 50 different people are going to interact with my software.
Two different developers said the same thing, Alex. They said the Google phone is the wild, wild west, and they don't want to get involved.
Well, what about the Android marketplace? I mean, you have a place you can go, the Android marketplace, where you're on all the phones.
Yeah, but the thing is if you look at the implementation, one of the things that we all kind of attacked Apple about was how tight they are on the apps and how they very slowly allowed apps to come on the phone, all this stuff. And what you got was a stable platform the whole time. When you just say, okay, everybody ready, set, go, and there's very few restrictions, somebody's going to get in there and crash that thing. There's going to be all kinds of, like you say, 50 implementations. Some features will work on this phone or not that phone. I think it's kind of a murky area, and you know, I hope it succeeds to the degree that it keeps some pressure on Apple, because I want to see my iPhone continue to improve. But I don't know. I'm not convinced yet. I'm going to buy one and play with it and find out. You know, but no matter where you live, there's some place your phone isn't going to work.
Yeah. Right. One of the arguments in the favor of Google having their own hardware is to have the level of control over the handset that Apple has over the iPhone, right, where they would know exactly what the hardware loadout is, also so that they could push a feature or push an update onto it and know exactly what that state is. There are only a few. There really aren't that many Android phones on the market right now. But even so, if you hand someone a really cool new Android phone and it's an HTC Hero, the guy who bought the G1 phone will say, wow, the new operating system has this wonderful application switcher and has this really wonderful dashboard. And then you have to explain to them, well, no, that's just something that HTC adds to this specific model of phone. So there might be a benefit to having that going on. Android Marketplace is a great unifier, but I have three different Android devices in the house right now, and two of them can't use the standard marketplace because one of them has a kind of an odd-shaped screen. And they feel as though it's better to have one central marketplace for them, where they know that everything has been checked out for this device. So
that's kind of like the Windows Mobile world got, and it really didn't work. It was a really bad situation. I think what Google's doing I agree with you, Andy. This is their goal, is to make us kind of some sort of platform that's a reference platform. They call it the Google Experience, they'll have Google Experience phones, of which this may be one. Maybe they won't sell them. Some companies will. They'll be certified the full Google Experience. They'll have more Google applications on it. There'll be, you know, a certain minimum screen size, a certain configuration, minimum configuration. And if you want all of the Google Experience, you'll buy that phone. If you're willing to get something like the Motorola Click, which is heavily customized, you'll get that phone. And I think that appeases the carriers who really do want to customize. That's how they can do value add. I mean, if everybody has an Android, or rather a droid, a Motorola droid, it's all, and they all look the same, then it's down to the network. And we can see the fights that have evolved over that.
Well, and that's Verizon.
I mean, Verizon wins that one, yeah.
Who wins that pipe?
Yeah.
For now. We already see some of that with, you notice that some of these Android phones have powered by Google stickers on the back of it or somewhere on the branding. That means that it has to contain a certain minimum level of compatibility with the platform, a certain minimum level of software that's provided and written by Google. The ones that don't have that sticker are the ones that can go freestyle a little bit better.
I think that's where we're going.
Well, the folks on this show often...
Go ahead, Scott.
Well, I was just going to say that the folks on this show often worry about monopolies. I mean, if Google's got my Gmail and my Docs and my calendar and my phone, and, you know, they go belly up, then what do I do?
Oh, yeah. That's the data. Google actually addresses that with something called the Data Liberation Front. If you go to dataliberationfront.org, they have created, and they are having a company-wide initiative that lets you get your data out of anything that Google's done.
We're dealing with mobs attacking the AT&T network. Right. We're doing liberation fronts on another platform. Is this indeed Cuba 1951 that we're dealing with just by trying to get a damn dial tone?
We just want a phone that works. Please.
How about if we just buy the phones we like and, you know, keep buying them if we keep liking them, and then just, you know, let's not buy guns. How about we try that?
The question I have for those of you who have been playing with, and Andy, that you're playing with these different Android phones, are, do you feel like the fit and finish is as good as an iPhone?
Oh, yeah.
Oftentimes, yes. They have to accommodate a lot of different hardware in order to make it work. If I have any problems with the Droid, it's that it has to do a lot of stuff just to accommodate that slide-out keyboard. But there is, you're right in that there is a lot of room in the bottom end to say that we need to be able to build this for X minimum number of dollars, and you will see that in the form of case parts that sort of rattle around a bit, a battery cover that tends to pop right off when you don't want it to, which is i.e. anytime you do not want to get access to the battery.
Yeah, but trying to get it off when you want access to the battery, and it's hours to figure it out. There's some secret button, I know that. We're going to talk more, but Steve Jobs is in the running for Person of the Year again with Time Magazine.
He must be so excited about that.
Again?
We're pulling for you, Steve. We're calling that 800 number for you.
And Apple has an interesting plan, and perhaps the tablet is part of that. To undermine or own the ebook market. We'll find out more about that in just a second. I do want to talk a little bit about one of our sponsors, the great GoToMeeting from the folks at Citrix, GOTOMeeting.com. Makes your meetings easier. You'll do more. You'll travel less. You don't have to be on a phone call that doesn't have any visuals, a boring old conference call. You can see what you're talking about. You can collaborate on documents together. And you don't have to jump in your car to drive across town for a five-minute meeting or fly across the country for a one-hour meeting. Who has the time? Who has the money? Hold those meetings right from your desk, as if you're in the room with the people you're meeting with. And you could try it right now for 30 days, absolutely free, for sales presentations, for product demos, for training sessions, collaborating on documents. Just $49 a month. $49 a month for all the meetings you want, as long as you want, and that includes voice over the internet and free teleconferencing. And yet, we're giving that to you free for the next 30 days. Go to gotomeeting.com/MacBreak. I do think you ought to try this if you are in business at all. We use it all the time now and have found it just to be an invaluable tool for Twit. And we pay for our account, by the way. It was just easier to do it. GoToMeeting, it's affordable. gotomeeting.com/MacBreak. We thank them so much for their support of MacBreak Weekly. All right, I think I think Steve Jobs now has 49% of the vote. I guess they're doing this online.
Regular text messaging rates apply.
Oh, yeah? You text message? It's like...
I'm just joking.
Probably right. American Idol.
It's American Idol. This week's contestant, Mr. Steve Jobs.
Steve is now one of seven candidates remaining. I guess they look at the success of American Idol and they say, how can we make this the same?
Yeah, there's like a two-hour show to reveal the winner after an hour and 50 minutes of commercials.
Yeah, exactly. Interestingly enough, in the early nominees, a cumulative entry representing Iranian protesters, which I would have voted for, that's no longer one of the top choices. Other finalists including the president, Barack Obama, Stanley McChrystal, runner Usain Bolt, Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, Chairman of the Fed, Ben Bernanke, and the Chinese worker.
Well, wait a minute. I nominate Leo Laporte, creator of the first all-day, anywhere, anytime video network talking about tech.
I'm not in the running, and I don't think I particularly care to be in the running.
Is this Time Magazine you're talking about?
Time Magazine. They've done this since 1927. You remember Hitler was the person. It doesn't have to be some
you
beloved.
You were the person of the year.
Never.
Remember? Did they use the internet back then?
They didn't use the internet for Hitler. The computer, the personal computer was the person of the year once. I can't remember when.
Do you remember the year when it was you?
You. That's right.
Yeah.
It was you.
Yeah. I thought it was Mylar.
That was pathetic.
Yeah.
You. It was you.
That was like, who? We really can't pick anything, so we'll pick you.
You. You, the people. You. You are all the person, the collective person of the year.
Shilling for subscribers.
They're going to decide by tomorrow.
I'm really hoping that it's the Chinese worker because they're probably the ones who are going to have to assemble the award statue anyway. So it'll make them feel involved.
Oh, and you're right. Be sure to watch today's show Wednesday, December 16th for the exclusive announcement of Time's Person of the Year. You're absolutely right.
You know, there's just not an original thought anywhere in control of a television station or a news magazine these days.
Yeah.
I hope it's Kathy Lee who hands Steve Jobs the award, though. That would be
I just love your computer. So Hasn't Jobs won before, or am I wrong?
I don't know.
Are they Jobs? For some reason, I think, I know the computer and you.
But can you imagine the Windows fanboys' heads spinning around on their neck upon hearing that announcement?
Why should Steve Jobs be the person of the year 2009?
I don't quite get that this year.
What did he do this year that made him so?
He survived.
Everyone was afraid that he was going to. Yeah, he survived.
I just don't.
And everyone was worried.
I don't see. Let me see here. Oh, yeah, here it is. Of course, who would have that list? Wikipedia. So Barack Obama was the person of the year last year. So he's in the running again, 2 years in running. Vladimir Putin. 2006 was the year of you. 2005 was the Good Samaritans, Bill Gates, Melinda Gates, and Bono. George Bush won twice in 2000 and 2004. The American Soldier won in 2003. The Whistleblowers in 2002. Rudolph Giuliani in 2001. Jeff Bezos in 1999. I don't see. That's interesting that Bezos would have won in 1999. No, it doesn't look like Steve Jobs has ever won before. The computer won in 1982.
How about Tiger Woods?
He was in the running, but now not so much.
Not so much. Well, again, does not have to be for doing good. Just for doing. And I think he did a lot of doing.
He's got a finger on the pulse.
He's got a finger everywhere.
You caught up.
Here we go. Ladies and gentlemen.
No,
responsible
you see,
for the following can, content, can, whatever
can,
it may
we,
be.
We can pull the wire from the battery right now before the bomb reaches singularity.
Okay.
All we'll have is a pool of warm tritium. We will not have
a sustained
reaction.
That's
right. If we cut it now, we will be telling stories for our grandkids about the smart, smart thing we just did.
Apple did win. We did it. We just did it. It's done. It's over. It's history. It's gone. It's erased from the minds of all. Apple did win a number of awards in Adweek's Best of the 2000s Advertising Awards. The Marketer of the Decade? Steve Jobs, right? Calling Jobs visionary, iconoclastic, and fearless. Yes, I think you'd have to give him credit for that. Mm-hmm. Brand of the Decade? Apple. Product of the Decade? iPod. Campaign of the Decade? Get a Mac.
Get a Mac.
Is that Get a Mac? Is that I'm a Mac? What is Get a Mac?
Yeah, that's the I'm a Mac.
Yeah, I'm a Mac is Get a Mac. By the way, PC is going to join us for a special holiday show. We do this every year. Well, second year running. John Hodgman and Jonathan Colton will join us on Thursday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern for a special holiday twit this Thursday. So, but I think I'm not allowed to ask him about those. Actually, he talked about last year. He talked about some funny things, like the one where he comes out of the floor. He's done some interesting things. Campaign of the Decade, Get a Mac. Out of home ad of the decade. I guess that means like billboards, right? Those great iPod silhouette ads. Definitely, right? Digital campaign of the decade. The Nike Plus ad. So that's Apple. Pretty much sweeping Adweek's Best of the 2000 Awards.
How about 2009?
What would you give the best ad of 2009?
Do they have one for 2009, or is it just all of the 2000s? Yeah.
This is for the decade.
Oh, okay, for the decade.
This is the 2000s. Oh. But I'm sure they'll do one for the year, right? Or maybe not.
I would think so.
Maybe not. So the rumor now... God, these rumors. You can't keep up with these rumors. New rumor, the iTablet, what are we calling it? The iPad?
The rumored Apple tablet. At this point, it's such a mental macro that you'd only confuse me by asking me to call it anything else.
The rumor
if you call it the iPad, then Andy can just change one letter in all of his books.
Yeah, but somebody else has that.
Out in the market.
Somebody else has that.
Oh. Well, you know, Apple. Someone else had the iPhone too, but Apple said, "No, we have it."
Like, yeah,
but all our paper says we have it. No, that's ours.
Information Week says the Apple tablet will come out in March with a very interesting strategy designed to own the ebook marketplace.
Ooh,
I don't think anything can own the ebook marketplace that costs more than $300. It'll definitely transform the ebook marketplace. It'll set the standard for how the relationship that a hardware developer will have with a publisher. And the amount of excitement that it's going to generate just for e-publishing in general is already, it's just phenomenal. When I wrote my piece about the I cannot name the Crunchpad by its new name because I don't want to encourage them. But when I did my piece about the Crunchpad last week, it's probably going to flare out and die pretty quickly. But it really does show that every single manufacturer of anything that's even remotely tablet-like that I've ever talked to is just preparing for what happens after Apple releases the tablet. I compared it to like the year before there's a world war. Where no, it's not, hasn't been announced. No, it hasn't been scheduled, but everybody's anticipating that the world is to be fundamentally different this time next year. And they're making arrangements to make sure that they're in the best position to survive and thrive in that new landscape. Especially when you talk to publishers, everybody has a concrete plan for how they're going to deal with the fact that there's going to be these really cool, inexpensive color touchscreen tablets to publish things onto. It is one of the most 2010 is going to be one of the most exciting years in technology, period. I think we'll look back on it and just that'll be one of those little things we put a little red push pin in and saying that's one of those years where everything changed after that.
Will it be as big as the iPhone, Andy?
I think it will be big as the iPhone, but for different reasons. It's not just going to work. The iPhone was a success because of the iPhone, and it created an iPhone universe. And if you're inside the iPhone universe, you benefit from that. And there's little tangential benefits to other people who want to buy smartphones, but chiefly that's it. I think that the tablet is going to be a really phenomenally cool device, but it's also going to create the environment in which every single magazine, newspaper, and book publisher is going to be that much more compelled to say, we are going to have a comprehensive digital publishing plan. It's not going to be something that some guy who was a failed vice president who would never make it further in the company, well, we'll give him the digital publishing division because that's not really very big and it's not going anywhere. Everybody has a horse in that race and everybody believes that that's an opportunity to make lots and lots of money. It will create the environment in which everybody starts thinking about publishing everything digitally from now on.
Cool. Yeah, I think that it is a the big thing is it shows you the advantage of being a hardware developer. Apple doesn't care about they don't care about selling the content. I mean, obviously they want to sell the content, but they're there to sell the hardware. And so the big distinction is that you end up in this situation where Amazon is trying to make money selling the content. And Apple can give publishers an entirely different deal because they just need to cover the costs, and that's an entirely different structure. And it makes it very hard. And I Amazon has some advantage. They have a hardware device, but that hardware device is going to pale in comparison to being able to see color and have, video and have the multimedia and have the interactivity. I mean, I think that the LP stuff that we're seeing in iTunes is a precursor. I hope it's a precursor to the kind of stuff we're going to start seeing available for this. That is the package, and what I'm hoping is Apple's going to use that same package and simply extend it with what they're doing.
Well, that's the big deal is not just the tablet, but the deal that they're probably going to offer to publishers. Every publisher I've talked to is also not terribly happy with the deal they have with Amazon. Amazon will, if you have a book that you want to publish through Amazon Kindle, Amazon will consider you to be their partner in the endeavor, and they will expect to be paid like a partner, whereas Apple and other distributors want to be paid like a distributor, saying, we will take it, we want to wet our beaks on this, we certainly want a taste of every sale, but this is your book, you're here to make money off of your career. Off of your property, we're just here to take a cut off of the transactions that you create. So it's time and time again, whether it's again a newspaper, a magazine, or a book publisher, they're all not terribly happy with the deals they're getting from Amazon, and they are thrilled with the prospect of being able to make deals with anybody else and start to get more favorable terms. And it looks like Apple and every other distributor is going to offer much better terms than Amazon. That's where Amazon is weak, not with the hardware, but with the business deals.
This speculation comes from Yair Reiner, who is an Oppenheimer analyst. He quoted supply chain contacts, saying Apple appears to be preparing production of as many as 1 million units a month, and he believes that assuming there are no production problems, they would have the inventory it needs to launch in March or April. He also said that it would be an iPhone-style LCD display, not an OLED display, which is kind of surprising. I think OLED is becoming the standard quickly. And it's believed that Apple will offer ebook publishers a 30-70 split. Apple, much like they do with iTunes, Apple gets 30, 70 goes to the publishers, which is and no exclusivity, which is significantly more than a book publisher gets in a bookstore. It is about what he says Amazon offers, but Amazon demands exclusivity. So
have you guys taken a look at that Sports Illustrated tablet demo?
Yeah.
That's been out there for a couple of weeks.
Tell us about it.
It's, the magazine world has been trying to figure out how to port magazines to electronic distribution for a long time. And the websites we see now are the result, and they're not particularly compelling or different. And Time Warner, I don't know whether it would be successful or not, but it does appear to be thinking differently and thinking in a more of a convergence manner, where they have taken the editorial, the good parts of the editorial infrastructure to put it together into a tablet delivered device. And you can get this on YouTube or Vimeo. Just Google Sports Illustrated tablet demo, and there's a bunch of fluff in there as well, but it's an interesting new approach to the idea of what is screen delivery offer you that augments what could be in a magazine, and yet how do you make some kind of a compelling presentation all put together in one package.
This is the one that was shot on the Red camera, right? Is that right? They shot this whole thing on.
Well, I think I'm not sure that's the issue as much as it is that it's just repurposing of magazine and really kind of television kind of content into a tablet driven, touchscreen driven electronic delivery format.
All I was going to say is that we saw this when we went from analog to digital in photography, is that for a while the digital will be behind. It won't look as pretty. It won't do quite as much. It won't be the same resolution. But there's a point in time where what you get out of it just simply makes the analog seem silly.
Yeah, and we got to that point. No, it makes it feel dirty and expensive.
dirty in particular.
We're not talking about Tiger Woods.
You did. You see, you brought it right around.
The interesting thing is we're seeing in the professional photography world that more and more of us are finding that we're shooting only for electronic distribution rather than paper distribution these days.
Right.
And that really is something that's the story of 2009 from our perspective in the photo world, is that this rumored change to electronic publishing really hit this year. And, it's maybe Time Warner will make it with this thing, but it's a lot of overhead those guys are carrying around too. So not going to be an easy switch.
One of the things that I think is interesting also, all I was going to say is that I think that's interesting to see what's going on with this. I think the LP stuff that we're seeing in iTunes mixed with the new extended video stuff for the DVD experience, that we're seeing along with, possibly this publishing is really, I mean, when I saw the extended DVDs, I was like, well, I don't have any reason. Once they start actually publishing these, I don't have any reason to buy DVDs anymore. The only reason I buy them is for the extras, And so I think that all of these things just continue to push iTunes into the center of this, of all of this stuff.
We're going to take a break, come back, talk more about the Mac. Also, I hope your picks of the week, too. Peter Krogh is with us, the author of The Damn Book at thedambook.com. Really the book to read if you're looking at the digital asset management, what to do with your digital photography. Also, working... It's really cool with the Library of Congress on a way of, preserving digital content at dpbestflow.org. Scott Bourne back. It's good to see you again, Scott. Welcome. Andy Anacco from the Celestial Waste of Bandwidth in Chicago Sun-Times. And, of course, Alex Lindsay on Skype this week because he's in Pittsburgh visiting family. Before I go farther, though, I should probably mention our friends at Ford and the great Ford Sync. We're talking now about bringing a Ford Flex. That was the one you were looking at, Scott, down to CES and showing everybody how Sync works. You really have to try it to understand.
I spent all weekend driving Ford's trying it.
Did you? What'd you think?
I synced myself up like you would not believe.
And you liked it?
I think Sync is really cool. I just wish it was available on a little larger car for horizontally
I thought you were
going to
get
drivers.
A Lincoln. It's on the Lincoln.
The Lincoln is tiny.
It is?
I drove the MKS. I was like really close to thinking I could buy it looking at the specs. And I sat in it. It's about the size of a VW Beetle.
Fortunately, we're not all Scott's size.
That's true. They don't design cars for me. They designed them for Alex.
You're not that big, though. Oh, I love my Mustang. It's very comfortable. Anyway, the Ford Sync is the hands-free system that not only does your Bluetooth phone, but also is for your music, for information. With Sirius Travel Link, you get five-day weather forecasts, ski reports, movie times, fuel prices, all without taking your eye off the road or your hands off the wheel. You press the Sync button, you tell your car what you want to know, and it talks to you. It tells
climate,
you back.
Temperature. 72.
It's so cool. Isn't that cool to do that?
I just kept doing it over and over. I was like, wait. Climate temperature, 73. No, wait a minute. Climate temperature, 72 again.
It's a lot of fun, I have to say. It's a lot of fun to play with it. So we want everybody to give it a try. Best way to do it, go to your Ford, Lincoln, or Mercury dealer. But if you're going to be in Vegas at CES, come by. We're going to drive the Mustang down. We'll also have a Ford Flex that you can play with and take a look at. It is just amazing. Or you can go to SyncMyRidePodcast.com and look at the site there. It'll bring you over to SyncMyRide.com, which is the site for Sync owners. They can get software updates there. They can get vehicle history reports. It actually will send your vehicle health to the website so you can look at your vehicle health. It's just the next generation of electronics in your automobile. Really remarkable. Yes, every car should have it. Ford, Lincoln, and Mercury is the only cars that have it right now. Not to mention the safety features. Just take a look. SyncMyRidePodcast.com. You never had a better computer friend. A little computer buddy in your car. The Sync lady just talks to me. I just love her. Ford Sync. SyncMyRidePodcast.com. Let's see here. Other stories in the nudes today.
Oh, here we go.
No, this is not a Tiger Woods story. Don't get your hopes up. Actually, probably helped the ratings a little bit. Chinese site PCOnline.com.cn via HardMac leaking details about the upcoming Gulf Town. It's that 6-core processor that Intel's releasing and probably will be in the Mac Pro just in time to make Scott Bourne jealous.
I would just buy another one.
Just the Core i9 6-core processor. There is a slide, and it doesn't look like a fake slide. It looks exactly like the kind of slides that Intel...
Aren't we going backwards? What about 8? We already got 8 core. Why do we want 6? I want 16.
No, it's you have...
This is for each.
Yeah.
Oh, I see.
So you have 4 cores each with 2 threads, so that's 8. This is 6 cores each with 2 threads, so it's really 12.
Okay.
So a single processor Mac Pro could have 12 processor threads and 24 logical cores. Actually, let me get my math right. A single chip Mac Pro would have 12 threads. A dual chip Mac Pro would have 24 threads. 3.3 gigahertz, looking at March 2010 timeframe. So if you're in the market for a Mac Pro, it looks like a reasonable time would be this spring. Gulf Town should. 32 nanometers. It's amazing what they're doing with this stuff. QPI, which is a really... interesting way that Intel's using of connecting these processors together so they can work together. Hyper-threaded. i9, some people are calling it. Just thought I'd pass that along since Scott just bought a Mac Pro.
I can't wait.
Yeah, it's you know what? Here's the thing. The great thing about buying a Mac Pro when you do it to write it off is you can buy another one next year to write it off too.
You get one every year, whether you need it or not. Chrome for Mac and Linux out now, which means Chrome's available on Windows, Mac, and Linux. And now the Google browser is ahead of Safari in the number 3 spot, according to Net Applications, which tracks the browser habits of 160 million unique visitors each month to 40,000 sites. Chrome's market share, 4.4%.
I'm just not that impressed.
Safari only 4.37%.
It doesn't display some sites properly for me, and it certainly doesn't feel any faster.
You know, I think you're right on that. I don't think it's that much faster than WebKit, certainly. I think it's probably about the same speed as WebKit.
Yeah, what I'm really looking for is it. I want to see good evidence that it becomes more stable and more safe to use when you're working with sites with dodgy flash and dodgy plugins than anything else. Feature-wise, it just can't compare to Firefox or Safari. But if it will help my entire Mac runs more safely, more smoothly, and faster, I'm all for it. But I haven't really seen really great evidence of that so far.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm still using Safari and Firefox because of the extensions. Firefox is the sluggard, though, now, right? I mean, it's really by far the slowest. What do you use, Peter, for your browser?
I'm a Safari and Firefox guy, mostly.
Yeah. Now that Chrome on Windows has extensions, and a lot of the extensions that I like and use are now available on Chrome on Windows, not on the Mac, unfortunately. But it's making
it
a much...
Well, I had to give up on Camino because they updated it and upgraded it to the point where now it doesn't work.
Oh, no. Doesn't work how? Doesn't work for you?
It worked great for me before, but now it doesn't see stuff that it used to see. It used to be really good about using. I would use it because when I went to a Windows based site that I couldn't see so well in Safari, Camino would always render it pretty faithfully. But they upgraded to version 2.01 upgraded to version 2 and then now 2.01, and there's whole parts of pages I can't see. For instance, on Bitly, I can't see the updates. They don't show.
That's no good. No. Oh, that's because that's an extension.
Yeah. So, but it used to work before they updated it. So now I'm using Safari almost exclusively.
There is on the Mac OS 10 Hints, our chat room has just told me, Stephen B. just passed along, there is a article on how to enable extensions in Chrome on the Mac. Now you're hacking. You have to launch it from the command line using an enable extensions command line argument. I'd say wait. My advice. Exactly. Yeah.
Or step one, download Firefox. Step two, download plugins for Firefox.
Yeah, there you go. So I bought a 27-inch iMac. Didn't have any problems with it. It's running great. It's in the school, and they're using it to do with Logic to do podcast recording, editing, and all that stuff. And it's running great. But apparently, it is the most problem-plagued Mac in a long time. Harkens back to the early days of the MacBook. A lot of them coming DOA, damaged. Displays are flickering or distorted. And in fact, Apple says we're delaying shipments of 27-inch iMacs by 2 weeks. Could be because of strong sales. Could be because they want to figure out what's going on and fix this problem. Apple, when asked for a comment, I'm quoting All Things Digital, All Things D. Apple said, the new iMac has been a huge hit, and we are working hard to fulfill orders as quickly as possible. We apologize for any inconvenience or delay in delivery this might cause to our customers. He didn't say, the spokesperson did not say, if it had to do with the issues with the machine.
This is sort of like 1984 when they reduced the chocolate ration but said, we're increasing it to a quarter ounce.
Yeah, did you really expect him to add, because we're having trouble building it at the end of that statement?
No. I wondered if it was the box, because that thing, when it came, it's big, and it's in a box, you know, and it's good. It's the usual Apple packaging where they have the styrofoam ears, but I could see how, you know, it's so big that it could get torqued a little bit. I could see how you could have problems in delivery.
Well, I wonder if it's a different type of box than the 30-inch, because the 30-inch has a big box, but it really comes in more of a computer box, where it's not ears, I don't believe. If I remember correctly, the 30-inches that we've gotten, you know, have kind of, they're totally encased in styrofoam, and it might have been in that change in packaging that caused some of the trouble.
Yeah,
it's cheaper, I'm sure, to do the packaging that way, but I think that might be one of the challenges.
Any other stories before we get to our picks of the week? iPhone 3.13 coming soon. OS 4.0 discovered, according to Boy Genius Report. These are in the logs. You know, if you're at Apple, you might want to think twice about surfing to Boy Genius Report with your new iPhone unreleased, because they check that stuff. Might want to stay away from the rumor sites.
Did you see the poor woman who had her Mac shot by the Israeli
government? Yeah. Holy cow. What happened? What's this? I only saw the picture. I didn't. Why did it get shot?
So evidently, yeah, I mean, it's one of those things. Like, you're probably doing things that you should. As someone who goes to some of these countries, you know, you probably you don't want
to
have.
Yeah, but usually, people don't feel necessary to shoot the computer.
Yeah, well, she had, I guess, some kind of Arabic kind of sticker on her keyboard in Israel, which is not usually a good thing, and some and a variety of other things. So she got brought into questioning, and while she was in questioning, she said, "Put your stuff over here," and then someone took her laptop out, evidently, and decided that it was a bomb threat or something like that. And,
oh, yeah, that's what I would do with a bomb. Shoot it. First thing, you know, I would do, yeah, just shoot right so at that bomb.
So they put three rounds in it, and fortunately for her, this gets back into the digital. I was thinking about this when we were talking about backing up your files, because she said her years of her life are on this laptop. I was like, you're crazy to be traveling to anywhere, especially places that are less secure, to be having you know, to tap everything that you actually, you know, years of your life on one hard drive. But they missed the hard drive, and evidently she was able to get her stuff back.
That's the amazing thing. The hard drive survived.
Well, it didn't go through it. If it had gone through it, she would have had to maybe send it to Drive Savers to see if
it would have been gone.
Yeah, if you shoot a bullet through a hard drive, generally, it's been my experience.
Yeah, but boy, if it survived, wouldn't it make for a great ad?
Yeah.
No, our hard drive survived 45 caliber rounds.
Oh, was it a 9mm or a 45? Because we have a rig to recover from 9mm, we only have an experimental process for 45 caliber.
But look at this. Look at those holes.
Like, that looks like bigger than 9mm. That's all I
got. Those
are big holes.
Military ordnance, for sure.
It's like a rocket launcher, for crying out loud. Yeah. What the hell do they use?
All I'm saying is that you're not going to reboot after that. No, that's, you know, they're,
but wait a minute. Now, it's amazing. Oh, I see. The hard drive's in the upper right-hand corner, I guess. And so they shot three bullets, it looks like, through the lid, goes through the glass, into the keyboard. Wow.
All I got to say is, ow.
That's got to hurt.
So back up.
You should see the photo of the guy who wore the Yankee ball cap with the Yankee stickers that actually brought his laptop to the Red Sox stadium.
That hard drive did not survive.
Oh.
No. That hard drive just didn't make it.
Is there any news on that up there, Randy, in Boston? Did they put that one on the news, or was it too gruesome?
Not really. We're mainly concerned with freezing to death up here.
No, you're not going to freeze to death tonight. You might freeze to death tomorrow.
Again, the soil is soft enough that we can get the bodies in. Not the full 6 feet, but a good 2.5-3 feet. Enough that the wolves won't get them. Won't get Grandma until February or March at the latest. That's all you can hope for. You know, you do the best you can. That's all you can do.
What is iTunes Connect? It's the Apple appears. This is a story from 9 to 5 Mac. Came out today. Apple appears to be overhauling the infrastructure behind the iTunes App Store, confirming that iTunes Connect, the portal used by those who choose to make apps available through the Apple service, is to be out of action through the Christmas period.
Oh, good.
Oh, no, that's not infrastructure. They don't want to have to review apps. They're trying to catch up. iTunes Connect provides access to tools and resources developers need the distribution of iPhone and iPod Touch applications through the App Store, including application delivery, application management tools, sales information, banking setup, and financial reports. Unavailable December 23rd through December 28th.
From the Department of Bad Timing.
No kidding.
That's going to hurt.
2 days before Christmas, through Christmas and a few days after. So people who want to give away an app for Christmas, no. Give an iPhone and you can't be. Well, that's crazy. Does that mean we won't be able to install?
So the person who made that decision, I have a simple question. Did your parents have any children who lived?
Wait a minute. Let me think about that. I got to think about that. Let's
guessing there's some real reasoning behind that.
Well, when are you going to do it? If you're going to update. Well, 5 days.
Not the busiest couple of shopping days in the world.
5 days too. Yeah.
It's not an arbitrary choice.
Like, okay, why not after New Year's when everybody's drunk?
Yeah. So does this mean you can't buy an app?
No.
It sounds like it to me.
Or can't you can't upload
I think
an
that's
app.
All
app.
You can't submit it.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm guessing. I think it's a way to make sure the developer community spends the holidays with their families and their children, right. their loved ones. Yeah, they exactly. should they be spending Christmas Eve assembling bicycles for their youngest daughter, not a new fart app for the exactly. edification of iPhone users.
Exactly.
That's us every friend.
They're thinking about us.
Exactly. Apple, they're our daddy. They're our mommy.
That's very funny.
They're not going to give us anything good for the 25th. We're getting socks and underwear, as usual, but sometimes they know best.
Gentlemen, ready your picks, and I don't mean your nose. Ready your picks of the week. We're going to get your picks of the week coming up in just a moment. But first, our Audible pick of the week. Audible is that great website that we talk about all the time. If you're not yet an Audible member, I'm getting email all the time from people who said, I bought my first Audible book. I'm so excited. A lot of people, the deal has expired for Larry Niven's Ringworld, but a lot of people listen to Ringworld and just flip their lids. Audible.com, if you haven't tried it yet, it is just a fantastic way to get involved with audiobooks. It's really the best audiobook store online anywhere, or anywhere, period. Audible, audible.com, 65,000 titles, science fiction, history, facts, any kind of book that you're interested in. First thing I do is I always go to audible.com and say, do they have it on Audible? Because that's where I want to, that's how I like to listen to a book. They just released Alice Walker's The Color Purple for the first time in audio. A Christmas Carol with Tim Curry. That's actually free. You can get that for free if you're an Audible customer. What is your pick, Andy Iannacco? You always have such great books to read.
Well, I'm a little bit stuck in a rut. Since our trip to China over the summer, I've been sort of doing all the reading that I probably should have done before.
Are you learning about China now? Yeah,
I've been reading a lot of books about China, and the one that's been caught my eye the most recently is just a cool travel book, no matter what the subject, by J. Martin Troost. He has one of those really great Dutch names, called Lost on Planet China. It's been a while since I've given you the box score. It is 10 hours and 52 minutes, so you're definitely getting value for money. But it's a series of travel essays about his trips through China. The really great travel books, they're not the ones that will convince you that, well, and the effects of the opium wars in the mid 1800s were to both open up ports right. to foreign. It's more like, okay, well, here's what it was like to eat snake. Here's this taxi driver that I ran into in Shanghai. Right. You really want the best slideshow that anybody could ever give you about their really awesome trip to this place that you hope to go to someday but probably never will. So it's always about humor. It's always about being entertaining. But the parts of it that I've read so far, it's been, oh, this is going to be cool. It's also of that category of books where you don't have to really immerse yourself in it. You don't really have to commit to getting from page one to the last page in 1 week of your life. It's very episodic in nature. So you can just take a chunk and just read that, just listen to that for the first hour, take another chunk for another little bit of a trip. And if you spend 2 weeks not listening to it, that's fine, because there's going to be another episode waiting for you as soon as you get back. So I'm not sure if I understand anything about China that I did not understand before reading the first 3 or 4 chapters of this. But I know I'm in for the rest of it. Troost is a really great writer. He really paints a picture. And if this were a fictional story, I'd be no less satisfied, because it's very, very entertaining.
Excellent. Great choice. I can't wait to read that. That's our Audible pick of the day, Lost on Planet China by J. Martin Troost. And you can get it for free if you go to
Audible. Troost bit my sister once.
Yes. You can get it for free at audible.com/MacBreak. I just love Audible. I know you will too. In your car, at the gym, when you're doing housework. Audible.com/MacBreak. We do thank them so much for their support of MacBreak Weekly. I didn't warn you, Peter Krogan, so you don't have to do a pick of the week if you don't want to, but I'll give you some time to think about it. I bet you could find something that in your library that you think every Mac user should have. But I'm not going to start with you. I'm going to start with Mr. Alex Lindsay in the upper left-hand corner to block. Alex?
I washed yet another good set of headphones. Not my iPhone, but the headphones.
Oh, and I hate it when that happens.
I've now decided that it's not really a problem anymore. It's just an opportunity to test another set of headphones, and I think that I have found my favorites. So one of the rules is that they have to be in ear. I don't do any little like, and they have to be like flanged. You know, I really like to have them go all the way into my ear, and now I really need them to have have some kind of phone jack. So I don't want to have,
right.
I don't care how nice the headphones are. I need to be able to answer the phone, so on and so forth. So, I hope I say this right. The
Edemotics. I use those. I know what you're going to say. Those are my favorites too. They're great.
They are. And I got to say, I have used almost all of them. Almost all of the iPhone capable headphones. I think at some point in time I've owned them, and at some point in time I've washed them in hot water mostly. And so this is my newest pair, and I am so happy with them. I feel like they are easier to put in my ears. I feel like the sound quality is very, very high. The sound quality, I've been asking people, and they said the sound quality is actually really good as far as the being able to hear me too. They're a good design. They're the right length. They have all the things that are important. And so that's my recommendation. And they're actually a little less expensive too than some of the other ones I got. I think these are $149, either $149 or $129. But a lot of them are running $149, $179. And I spend a lot of time with my headphones on. And so to me, that's not a big price to pay. The other thing to know about when you wear these or noise canceling, I don't like noise canceling because I can hear what it's doing with the noise canceling. It makes me a little crazy, more crazy than normal, not like I started from normal. But when you put them all the way into your ear, you actually run with a much lower volume because you're not competing with everything around you. So it's actually, in my opinion, better for your ears. Now, if you turn it all the way up, it's worse.
These are it's the HR. Do you remember the model number? I was just
looking at
HR2s.
I think it's HR2s or HC2. Yeah. And I think it's the only one that they make that is compatible with the iPhone, that has the headset and the mic and everything else. There's something that they really thought out how they, all the way down to
HF2.
Yeah, HF2. Sorry, yep. They even thought out the way. I didn't realize like this little slant here makes it much easier when you press it in.
Yep.
It just goes, it's just really, really well thought out. So anyway, that's it.
I have two pairs. I have one I keep at the gym and one I wash in my washing machine regularly. It survived, by the way. It survived several washes. So I don't know if they're more robust or I'm just lucky. But yeah, $129 on Amazon. The list is $179. But I have bought several of these. I just love them.
Yeah.
I haven't tried washing it yet. I'm going to save that test.
I wouldn't recommend it. Yeah. Wouldn't recommend it, but yeah, it works. Scott Bourne, you haven't had a pick in a while. What's your pick?
Well, I had a pick last week.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And I understand you ridiculed it.
Did I ridicule it? What was it?
It was the Zagudo Z Finder.
I did ridicule it, but I ridiculed it to your face as we were doing it.
I just gave it you a hard time.
I wanted it. It's not that I didn't want it. I have an EP1.
Oh, trust me. If you actually touched
I desperately want one. I just can't afford it.
You'd be an owner.
Yeah.
And as far as you can't afford it, if I had your money, I'd throw mine away. So, come on. my pick this week is at the opposite end of the spectrum, 1/700th of an Alex. It's 99 cents. It is an iPhone camera app. So, it's called Darkroom Premium, formerly known as Steadicam Premium.
Huh.
You guys use this?
I don't know that one.
No. Oh my goodness, is it cool. Its origins are that, we all shake a little bit when we hold this thing and try to take a picture. So it had an image stabilization algorithm it used, and that's when it was called Steadicam. But now it does a lot more. It gives you a grid guide. There's a timer. It just really makes the camera much more valuable. So you can steady things, you can use the timer, you can shoot in a full screen mode. I've now just used this to take all my pictures rather than the standard iPhone app.
How fast is it? Pretty quick?
It's well, now it slows down if you're shaking.
Right.
It's going to slow you down a little bit because it's trying to get a steady shot. So you won't get that instant gratification of clicking the button and grabbing the shot, because it's going to slow things down until you're steady. But short of that, it's fine. I mean, all these phone apps that take control of the camera add a little overhead, but I don't find it in any way, shape, or form to be problematic. And for 99 cents, it's just, I can't imagine anybody that's serious about taking pictures with their camera not owning it.
Awesome. Very nice. Andy Inatko, your pick of the week, my friend.
Well, this is sort of an offshoot from a conversation we had a few weeks ago when we were talking about the new the new Apple mouse. I hadn't really played with Wacom's Bamboo pen and tablet before, and seemed really curious about it. It seemed really interesting, so I actually had them send me one to play with, and it's become like one of my very, very favorite input devices. I've had tablets before, but I'm not a real artist, and I tend to, when I'm editing photos and stuff, I tend to do it with my mouse. And I've always thought that tablets were a very, very, you know, nichey sort of thing for an average person to have. They're useful for what they do, but you're not going to spend $150 for one unless you really have a need for a tablet. The Bamboo Pen and Touch has a couple of big advantages in that. Yes, it does have a pen, and yes, you can use it like a regular pressure-sensitive tablet. It has buttons on the pen, all the really cool features that you would expect to find on a tablet. But the tablet itself is also touch-sensitive. So when you're not using it as a pen input, you can just have this on the side of your machine, and just like you would be interacting with a trackball, pretty much. If you think of it as a flat trackball, that's exactly what you have here. You can mouse with it. You can stroke with two fingers and scroll with it. It even has a sort of a virtual trackball feature where if you give it a quick stroke up, it'll just, the cursor will continue to roll and roll and roll and spin with something approximating really good physics. And there are four clicky buttons on the left-hand side of the pad underneath your thumb that you can configure to all kinds of different things. It's only $99, so that's definitely within reach of anybody who's shopping for a premium mouse. And I like it because it's just so versatile. So it's a tablet, cool. It's a trackpad, that's also cool. But it'll also stop me from this nonsense where, you know, see, actually, of course, I still have one right here where, you know, I need to be loaned a product or something. And so, of course, I have to sign some sort of agreement that says, yes, I will return it in a couple of weeks. But it's still, I don't have a fax machine. I mean, I don't need a fax machine. So what I have to do is I have to print the damn thing out, physically sign it with a pen, then scan it, then email it back or go down to Kinko's. This way I can just simply do signatures just for the things I need signatures for. So the $30.
So you would recommend the pen and touch as opposed to just the touch.
They make three or four different styles of it. One is just touch. One is just pen. The pen and touch cost so little more than the rest of them that you may as well get the full Magilla. It really is a feature where if you have it next to your computer at some point, you will at some point realize, wow, that saved me like five or six steps. And it was really just almost the perfect thing for the sort of stuff that I tend to do.
Looks really great. You know, Don McAllister was talking about it on the show when you were gone.
Also, one more thing. I also like the fact that I thought this was just, oh, cool. Isn't that cute? They decided to put like a red tab on the side of it, just like they have on a pair of jeans. Then realized, oh, no, that's actually very cool. They decided to make that into the pen holder. Ah. So that's the one time that you don't actually lose the pen. So this is probably the one tablet I will be testing where I will actually not lose the pen sometime before I end up testing.
That's cool. Alex, you were going to say something?
I don't have that Bamboo, but we have a bunch of the Bamboos, and I have one that I keep in my I have a regular Wacom tablet to do real work on at home, but the Bamboo is the one that I carry around on my laptop
Oh,
bag.
Oh, you carry it around?
So great. Oh. One of the great things that they do that some of the other ones don't is that the USB cable is just a standard USB cable, and it just pops out. So it's just something I can just throw in the same sleeve as my laptop, and I just carry that thing around. So if I need to do, you know, quick edits, but mostly what I do with it is I'm doing feedback. Like I circle things and go, you know, I just open up in Photoshop or whatever, and I circle things and go, oh, change this and move this stuff around and move this stuff over here. And I'm not, when I'm on the road, I'm not really considering it as something to do real artwork on. It's just something that's a lot faster and easier than my trackpad or a mouse to provide real feedback quickly.
Peter, you use it. I remember you used a Wacom tablet in Australia. Have you looked at this?
Yeah, I'm not a huge user of it. It's good for some things, but I do have a tip if you're ready for that.
All right, fire away, my friend.
Okay, so dirty little secret of the Mac disk utility. It has this thing in there that says smart data passed, hopefully passed. The dirty secret is that your smart data that the drive is collecting, this is self-monitoring technology that's built into every hard drive, can show the drive in a state of failure or starting to be in a state of failure, and yet the smart data flag still says passed, so that when you examine a disk in your disk utility, it says, hey, this thing's fine. Well, there's a great little utility called Smart Utility that's made by a company called, I guess it's pronounced Volitans Software. It's VOLITANS-software.com. And this little $25 program called Smart Utility will let you get access to the data that's on the drive that's monitoring the health of the drive. And this lets you know if you have a drive that's failing before it's actually failed, which is actually the time you'd really want to know that. Cool. And, yeah, of course, this only is going to work on internal drives or drives that are some drives connected by eSATA. It won't work on FireWire or USB. But we've got it set up on my machines so that anytime I boot up a computer, it gives me a smart report, and I can see when I've got a drive that's starting to have problems, and I can take steps to make sure that I'm either pulling the data off the drive and sending it back for RMA or just keeping an eye on it.
So don't trust the disk utility because it's just not giving you that information.
Yeah, so what happened was that when Smart was originally implemented, the engineer said, oh, well, let's make it tell the user whenever the drive is really failing. And, of course, what happened then is that lots of drives and lots of computers got sent back because the Smart data was telling it. You know, and if you're Apple and you're thinking about the cost of FedExing a tower back to, you know, back to your service center and then back out, it's incredibly expensive, and you'd rather just, you know, have the user come back to you once the drive has fully failed. Wow. And I found this year, I think, five different drives that were in a state of pre-failure through this software. Hmm. And in each of those cases, the disk utility said the drive was fine.
Hmm. Volitan software. Yeah, no kidding. Yeah. $25, you could try it for free. Smart utility. It's online. Yep. Good pick.
Set it up as a startup item.
Yeah. Thank you, Peter. My pick, I've recommended in the past 1Password as a very Mac-ish, great way to keep track of all your Mac passwords. But there was one thing that always bugged me about 1Password. Yeah, it worked on the Mac and it worked on the iPhone. But I also use other phones, like the Droid. I also use other computers, like Windows. And it didn't share its, you know, passwords with those platforms. So I found a program, and I'm just loving it, that does. It's called LastPass at LastPass.com. It's more affordable, frankly. It's $1 a month for the paid version. You could try it for free. So it's $12 a year. They provide versions for Windows, Mac, Linux, Internet Explorer, Chrome, Safari, and Firefox, iPhone, BlackBerry, Windows Phone, Symbian, and Android. So really, everywhere you go, your passwords are stored, encrypted. It generates passwords for you if you want. It also has an online component so that you can get your passwords online as well. And there's a free version. So if you want to try the free version, take a look at it. And if you want to pay for the LastPass premium, it's $1 a month, which I think is quite affordable. This is my new password recommendation. Everybody, you know, we all have so many passwords. It's nice to have an automated way. It does also work on a USB key. Now, what I haven't figured out yet, I guess I could partition a USB key, is have the Mac version on one partition and the Windows version on the other partition. That would be kind of cool. But I've always used a USB key to keep my passwords on Windows with a program called RoboForm. I'd unplug it and the passwords would go away and I could go to another computer and use it. This does that. It's called LastPass at LastPass.com, and it's my pick of the week. We're done, gang. Really appreciate it. A great show. Thank you, Scott Bourne. Always good to see you, my friend.
Thanks for having me on the show, Leo.
Yes, indeed. You are the best. It's scottbourne.com. That's the place to go, right, if everybody wants. Or no, I'm sorry.
Scottbourne.com, photofocus.com.
Photofocus.com is the place to go. And we'll see you again next week. Also, thanks to you, Alex Lindsay. I hope your travels are safe. You're coming back home, so I guess you'll be in studio next week, yeah?
Yeah, I'll be in the studio next week and the week after.
Find him at pixelcore.com.
And by the, And by the way, Scott, I was talking to my sister. She loves Photo Focus.
Oh, really?
She's into photography.
And oh,
she's
loving it.
People are listening to this. They should really listen to Photo Focus, as well as This Week in Photography, of course. But she just thought Photo Focus is fantastic.
Isn't that funny that she told you that she likes Scott's better than yours?
Yeah.
Hey, I go on Twitter. I go on Twitter from time to time.
A lot.
All right.
Okay. I'm on TWIP from time to time, and I'm not a complete stranger to TWIP.
TWIP is done here every Mondays. What time do you do TWIP? 12:30 Mondays in the studio?
Do it 11 o'clock live.
11 a.m. Pacific, Mondays. 2 p.m. Eastern time on live.twit.tv if you want to watch TWIP. But photofocus.com. Andy Anacco's at the Celestial Waste of Bandwidth, CWOB.com, and also writes for the Chicago Sun-Times. Great to have you. And Peter, thank you. Now that you're here, I hope, I hope you'll come back now that you've found the way. Don't be a stranger. Peter Krogh is the author of The Damn Book. Best place to find that, thedambook.com. And also check out what he's doing at the Library of Congress with DP Best Flow, as in digital photography best practices workflow.
Yeah, you got it pretty good there.
Pretty close.
.org.
.org. Or com. Yeah. But .org.
And .com gets you there, too.
Anything else? Are you on any podcasts, Peter? We could plug.
You know, I'm busy enough as it is, Leo.
All right.
So
maybe we can get you on TWIP sometime.
I would love to.
Yeah. Peter's one of those photographers who's just always trying something new, exciting, and different, really experimental, and it's really fun to watch the amazing shots he gets as a result. Thanks for joining us, Peter. We appreciate it.
Thanks very much. I really appreciate it being here.
Thanks to all of you for being here. Don't forget, we do this show live at 11 a.m. Tuesday Pacific. That's 2 p.m. Eastern time, and I think, if my math is correct, 1900 UTC, but, you know, consult your local Oracle for conversions. And you can download the show now in audio and video at twit.tv. We provide high and low quality, or medium quality, I guess is probably better to say, versions at twit.tv. Soon on iTunes, and of course it's already on your Roku box and many other devices, thanks to the folks at MediaFly. So you can now watch as well as listen to Mac Break Weekly. Don't forget my tip jar. It's how I get paid. I have it right here. If you just guys want to reach out and just throw something in the tip jar, that'd be really great. We only have a few dollars. It's going to be a very sad Christmas. No, you go to twit.tv and tip Leo. That's how I'm getting paid these days. Leo Laporte here. Thank you for being here. Now get back to work. Break time's over.